You're listening to Alchemical Voices, a podcast exploring the lives of BIPOC, transracial adoptees, and survivors of complex trauma. Hi, I'm Jaslyn, your host, a nurse, and trauma release practitioner, curiously observing the human experience. As a Black woman and survivor of human trafficking, I've encountered many, many hardships. On the road to recovery, I discovered that storytelling unites us at heart and is where we find healing, inspiration, and encouragement. In each episode, you'll hear stories from courageous souls, and we will touch on subjects such as identity confusion, the impacts of racism, complex trauma, transracial adoption, and much more. How do we rise amid trials and tribulations? How do we invite softness into our lives? We touch on these and many other questions, so tune in to experience transformative storytelling and let's heal together. Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Alchemical Voices. In today's studio, we have Abigail Teixeira. Did I pronounce it? Yay! So cool. We were just practicing before recording, and I wasn't sure that I'd get it right, but yeah. I did.
You did. Hi, Abigail. You nailed it. Hi, Jaslyn. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great this Monday, this beautiful Monday morning in my time zone.
evening in my time zone, almost 8 p.m. here in Denmark.
Yeah, almost noon here, so definitely a big difference there.
You reside in, was it Canada?
I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
So honored to have you here from across world. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Abby, would you just like to dive right into it? If you would tell us a little about who you are, what you are passionate about, and why you chose to be a part of Alchemical Voices, which I am so grateful for, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Abby Teixeira, as you mentioned, and I'm in Canada. I am a wife, I am a mother of four beautiful children, ages 5, 4, almost 3, and 6 months. So life is intense, to say the least. I am also a survivor of childhood trauma and abuse in pretty much all forms. I am in recovery from addiction to alcohol, 10 years, actually. This is my 10th year. And with that has come 10 years of deep, intensive inner work. Because for me, the alcohol was the medication that I used to really numb and not deal with and ignore and silence, the things that I had really experienced as a child, coming from what I didn't mention is that I'm second generation Latina Canadian. So my parents are from El Salvador, and we immigrated to Canada when I was 6 months old. And coming from war, there was a really violent civil war going on in the 80s in El Salvador during that time. And with that has come generational chains of oppression, of war, of poverty, of abuse, of addiction. And my dad was one of those recipients of that, those generational chains, and then passed it down to my sisters and I. I'm the oldest of three. I have two younger sisters who were both born in Canada. I was the only one that was born. Actually, I was born in Mexico. So on the way from El Salvador to Canada, we had a layover in Mexico, and my mom was around 8 months pregnant at the time. And so we had to lay over there, and then my mom gave birth to me there, and I spent the first 6 months of my life. So I do have Mexican and Canadian citizenship, which is really cool. Really ancestrally, go as far back into the Mayan culture, the Mayan roots, which is really cool. I've been really diving deep into that. That's a whole other podcast. Really reclaiming, my ancestral roots, and really reconnecting with the medicine that comes with all of that, which has been really, really powerful. But this beautiful, messy, crazy journey of mine has, it's been my life's work, like I said, coming from a place where I numbed absolutely everything for the first large part of my life, because, when you come from cultures where what happens in the home stays in the home. You don't talk about it, even within the home. We don't talk about what is going on, what happened. We're told really to just kind of suck it up and get over it and, you know, kind of brush it aside or sweep it under the rug and move on. And as children, and I'll speak from my own personal experience, you know, as a child, when these things were happening and viscerally my body felt and my body and my soul felt that it was not right. Like there's something wrong. This isn't right. What's happening is not okay. But yet the adults around me telling me the complete opposite. It was very confusing for me. And so as a survival mechanism, like most survivors do, I just really disconnected from myself. So I disconnected from myself because it wasn't safe to be myself. Because myself, my inner knowing, my inner wisdom was telling me, you know, the complete clear opposite to what was being told to me from the people that were my caregivers at the time. And so needless to say, that really led to a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms that I developed just to kind of get by, just to survive, really, because the pain was so great that I couldn't focus on it. And so I needed something to focus on. So then I focused on things like an eating disorder, you know, like wearing lots and lots of makeup as a 12-year-old young girl, fighting in school, you know, later on in my teen years, a lot of, you know, just angst. I just was an angry, angry young girl. You know, getting into lots of fights, all of that kind of stuff. And then later on in my teen years was when I was introduced to alcohol at a house party. And from that day forward, that took precedence over everything else that I had kind of uncovered up until that point. And that was about 15 solid years. And so, yeah, 15 solid years of like deep addiction, deep depression, anxiety, multiple suicide attempts, you name it, pretty much I've experienced it in my life. And then, yeah, like I said, the summer of 2014 was what was a really pivotal moment in my life. It was what I like to call a crucible moment, where I was faced with two very real outcomes. You know, one of them was either I continued the life that I was living at that time, which was very reckless, a lot of drinking, blacking out, just being very, yeah, like I said, just very, very reckless with my life, and then ending up dead, or making the decision to change, whatever that was going to look like. I had no clue what that was even going to look like. I just knew that I needed to change. And so I chose that. I chose, you know, rather than death, I chose to live. And it was the best decision that I've ever made. But it's also been the hardest decision. And like with any decision, when we make it, we make the decision. And then what we have to do is we manage that decision every single day in order to keep it. And that's what has been the last 10 years, is just the really managing that decision to get sober, to heal, to recover, you know, and to really transform from the pain and the trauma and, you know, become the cycle breaker in my family, where I say, you know, it ends with me, no more. I'm not passing this on to my children. Instead, I'm going to help and replace healthier, better habits, better patterns, better cycles, you know, so yeah, so in a nutshell, that's a little bit of my story and who I am and kind of where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hello, you fucking powerhouse. I mean, Wonder Woman. What a wild journey. And mm-hmm. our stories are so similar. It's frightening. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, you are really like, I feel like I'm looking into a mirror, but it's like I'm looking at my future and my future is telling me you can make it. You can make it, Jasmine. Yeah. Just keep going. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing just your journey with us. Mm-hmm. So we do have a topic we want to touch on today, but I can feel something that's coming up for me is I am curious about that moment, that pivotal moment where you had to make up your mind, you had to pick a choice, which route am I going? And then how did you do it? How did you end up finding a healthy relationship and becoming a mother of four? Like, that is not easy because you didn't have the role models to demonstrate what healthy parenting looks like. So I'm just very curious to hear more about that journey, but only if
absolutely.
You want to.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually never wanted to be a mother, to be honest, growing up, because Like I talked about, I didn't really have a normal childhood, right? Where it was just fun and play and careless and carefree. And, so growing up when I was around children, I felt so awkward, to be honest. I remember just like I like them, but like it wasn't anything that I was like super drawn to. I didn't look at mothers and was like, oh, one day I'm going to be a mom. Things like that. Because, like I said, I just didn't even know what that even meant. I didn't even know what it meant. Like my mom, she was 17 when she had me. She was very young. And so we grew up in a very sisterly kind of relationship, where even to this day, we have that kind of sisterly bond. So it's like the four of us, me, my mom, and my two sisters. And all of us, we treat each other pretty much the same. We're very like, we're kind of all on the same level. Because my mom was, when she became a mom, she was, a young girl herself who also comes from a lineage of trauma and all of that kind of stuff. And, she did the best that she could with us, and she would get down to our level and play with us and things like that. But there was, she also didn't have really the role models. Like she started working outside of the home when she was 9 years old, because my grandfather passed away suddenly, and my mom was the second oldest in her family, and her mom had like nine children. And so when my grandfather passed away suddenly, she was left with like very small children. Like I think my aunties were like toddlers. And so my mom immediately had to leave the home and go work downtown in the city at 9 years old. So she also didn't really have much of a childhood, to really be carefree and play and all that kind of stuff. And so once again, these generational things passed down. And so it wasn't anything that I was super interested in. And, obviously when we come from a past and we've been modeled what it looks like to what love looks like, right? Like we look at our parents, and as I talked about, my dad was an alcoholic. He's a narcissist. He's got lots of mental health issues, lots of trauma, lots and lots and lots of trauma in his life. And I grew up watching, their relationship, and is very volatile, very, very volatile. And so for me, that's what loved looked like. So it was like, oh, okay, when you love somebody, this is how intense it is. There's raised voices, there's like hostility, there's all this stuff, right? And so I attracted those kind of men, in my teenage years and my young adult years. I had a lot of just really crazy, volatile relationships. And in my early 20s, after I had just been, I was in a relationship for like 8 years on and off that was just very toxic and very codependent, if you will. I met my husband now, so the love of my life. I met him through some friends. He was the complete opposite of anyone that I had dated before. He was mature. He was 7 years older than me, which was kind of a breath of fresh air because he was definitely mature. He was stable. He came from a really healthy, good home. And so we have like we have like a pretty crazy whirlwind kind of romantic early stages of our relationship. And it was pretty much very intense from the beginning. We moved in together a few months after being together, and fast forward to like a year and a half later, we were engaged. And before we got married, obviously we're going to have that conversation about children, right? We as couples, it's an important thing to have a conversation about. And so he asked me, he's like, so are you wanting to have a family? Because it's definitely something that I want, and it's really important for me. And I was open to it. I was like, okay, like I wasn't like super opposed, but I wasn't like leaping at it either, right? I was like, yeah, I'm open to it. I'm open to it, but not now. I told him, I was 27 when we got married, so I was like, in my later 20s, but still, at that time in my life, I was still very much deeply into addiction. I was still drinking a lot. I was partying a lot. And I couldn't even think about, bringing somebody into the world and me taking care of them. I was like, no, like not right now, but I'm open to it. And so we got married. And this is the thing about like as survivors, a lot of us can very much wear a mask so firmly that people have no idea what is actually happening, right? Because along the way, when I'm talking about like, I got married. And we had this beautiful wedding, and we were traveling around the world. We bought a home together. We were buying cars. all of that kind of stuff. And I actually went to university, I got my degree, I became a nurse. So like, you know, outside externally, everyone's like, oh, you know, she's got like an amazing life and all that stuff, right? But people didn't see that I was really, really struggling, you know, behind closed doors, where after work, I'd come straight to home. I had my bottle of liquor inside the freezer. I would take it out immediately when I came home. Like all day, I'd be thinking about this. I'd take it out and just pour it for myself. And I'd drink that entire bottle that night and then pass out of like complete like oblivion and intoxication. And then I would wake up and repeat the cycle again. It was just like, you know, and nobody had any idea, like nobody. And then on weekends, I'd go to parties and like birthdays and dinners and all of that kind of stuff. And no one really batted an eye. No one like came and talked to me and was like, hey, is everything okay? Like, are you okay? Is everything, what's going on with you? Nobody. There was like, you know, it was just very normal, especially because with alcohol, it's just so societally accepted, right? Mm-hmm. As like, you know, everyone kind of takes it too far sometimes and everyone has a good time, quote unquote, you know, blacks out, all of that kind of stuff. I thought blacking out was totally normal. And when I entered into recovery, I found out it's completely not normal. Like it's actually your body's way of like, you know, being like, basically it's like allergic to it, right? And I was like, what? You don't black out when you drink? You know, like... Right. And so so we had that conversation. I was open to it. And then we were together for about, I want to say, about 2 years into our marriage. I was still very much in that lifestyle of like, you know, the drinking, the partying and all of that kind of stuff. And the summer of 2014, my husband was actually in Brazil for the World Cup. So he was far away. And I was home and I was getting ready to go on three back-to-back trips with like girlfriends, different groups of girlfriends. I was going to go to Vegas. I was going to go to Miami and Barcelona, Spain. And so I had them all booked and everything, because this was my lifestyle. Like I worked hard as a nurse, you know, and then I would like, you know, play hard basically. Like I'd go traveling and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so my husband was away and I got invited to a birthday. And pretty much took it too far as always. At the birthday, got really, really drunk, and I drove drunk and I got caught. And this is actually my second time that I got caught. I had been caught maybe 3 or 4 years prior to that. It was shortly after I had graduated from nursing school. And, you know, at the time it wasn't like a really big deal. Like I just, it was just kind of a speed bump for me, like a road bump. And then I didn't, at no point in time at that time did I think, you know, maybe I have a problem, nothing. I was just kind of like, oh, well, this is inconvenient, you know, and just kind of moved on with my way. Like, and so here I am, I'm, you know, my husband's away, I'm by myself, I end up in jail. I wake up the next day, like after spending the night in jail, intoxicated, my car gets impounded, all of that kind of stuff. And I have to taxi my way home. So I had to call a cab. Tucked my way home, and then I get home and it's just like, I just remember the silence was so deafening. I walk in and I was like, wow, like what just happened? Like, and there was this like deep rooted, like dark, heavy, dense feeling inside that it was almost like relief. But at the same time, it was almost like somebody had shaken me and was like,
yeah,
if you don't change this, something really serious is going to happen next time. Right? Like you are either going to hurt somebody else, or you're going to hurt yourself permanently, right? And it was just this big wake-up call for me at that moment, where I knew that I just can't keep living like this. And it had been a while where, you know, I always talk about this. I've written about this in books that have been published, because it just stands, it's a moment in my life that stands so vivid and clearly, where I remember waking up on a weekend and, you know, opening my eyes, and the night before I had, you know, drank overly, excessively, well, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Opening my eyes, and I had this deep sense of dread where I just like opened my eyes and I was like, oh, another day, you know, like I was just like how sad my life was, that I was actually like disappointed that I had opened my eyes, you know, and that in this like drudgery of like, I have to like go through another day, you know, the motions of another day. Right. And it was really dark. It was a very, very dark time in my life. And but again, just not really knowing what to do, like anything like that. So I just couldn't continued. And I remember thinking to myself when I woke up in that moment, you know, I wish one day I would wake up and I wouldn't feel like this anymore. Like that was like the like I spoke it out. I was like, I wish one day I would just, not feel like this anymore. Right. And so then that was it. Then I, got up, did went on with my day. And a few weeks later, this happened. So I really like to, I consider it really divine timing and divine intervention because as we know, when we speak out what we want to the universe, we will get it. It just doesn't come in the way that we would have hoped or like we would have imagined.
No. I'm not even going to share my point of no return. That will come out one day, but you are absolutely right. When I put in my request, I had no idea how it was going to show up. All I can say is I had a gun to my head and I thought I was going to die. And I was like, what the fuck? This was not what I asked for. What are you doing?
It's
So
true,
I
and
say to
so I,
people, sorry, I just say to
yeah,
people,
go
be
ahead.
careful what you wish for because it is likely not going to show up the way that you imagine. So just be careful with your wishes. That's all I want to
Absolutely,
say.
absolutely. And that now when you become when you realize that you actually become prepared. And so now it's almost like this like funny game I play with God and the universe where it's like, I'll pray fervently for something and then it shows up. And once again, it's never the way that I envisioned it. And I'm like, okay, I'm like, well played, universe. So I walk into my condo at the time. I have all this paperwork and I just knew, like I said, I was just like, this is it for me. I need help. I need help. I don't know what it's gonna look like, but I know that I just can't continue living like this anymore because hurting myself is one thing, but then, the very real possibility of hurting somebody else, because of my recklessness. I couldn't live with that. I personally and truthfully, I had friends that had done that. I had a good friend of mine that was in a drinking and driving car accident, and his best friend got killed in the accident while he was driving. And you can never come back from that. You can never come
Wow.
back from that, and
No.
he spent time in jail. When he came out, he was like heavily medicated, all of that kind of stuff, because it's not something that you truly can ever get over. Like
No.
there's somebody else's life. And like that, I remember like those flashes came to me where I was like, I couldn't, I don't want that to happen to me. Right. And so I knew at that moment that something needed to change. Right. And I remember breaking
Yeah.
down, getting down to my knees, crying, and just like, it was like, help me. Like, I don't know. I don't even know where to turn, who to turn to, what to do. Right. And then I remember hopping on the phone with my husband and I told him what happened. And he was like, I'm flying home right now. And I was like, no, what are you going to do flying home? Like, that's not going to help the situation, And I was getting ready to leave on these trips, which was like ill timing for me. And so I convinced him to stay in his trip and enjoy himself as much as he could. And I was like, we'll deal with it when we're both back from our trips. And so I went on these trips. I was like a pure zombie. I remember I was just there really, really just going through the motions, really on autopilot, because in my mind, I knew that there was something really big and major that I was going to step into when I came back from these trips, right? Like these were kind of like little side distractions from the reality that was going to happen when I came home. And so when I came home, the first thing I sought out was support groups. And so that was the only thing I could think of. I was like, okay, there has to be like support groups. I know that I had saw a doctor years before that was court mandated when I got my first impaired driving charge. And I remember him telling me, he's like, have you ever thought of like 12-step groups or and I looked at him, I'm like, no, I'm like, that's for addicts. Like I was so in denial that that I had any sort of problem. I was like, that's not for me, that's for addicts. And it was like, clearly I was an addict at the time, but that seed that he planted a seed when we had that conversation. And so when I'm here in the depths of my like reality, that came up to my head and I was like, okay, like I remember him mentioning support groups. So I like looked in the on the internet and I found some local ones for women only because I was like very specific about it. I was terrified. I was like, like what is this even gonna look like? So I knew I wanted to be surrounded around like women who, for whatever reason, like I just felt uncomfortable in like a co-ed or like mixed or whatever. And so yeah, and that was my first step pretty much. So entering some recovery groups, some 12-step programs. And then I started the real deep dive work into the healing process through talk therapy, through different modalities. I tried anything and everything. I say that willingness was my superpower at that time, because whatever it was, I was willing to try. Even if it was uncomfortable, even if I was scared, I was willing to try it, because I knew that this was like, I felt like I was, this is my last fighting chance, right? And I wanted to give myself the best opportunity to heal. And I wouldn't do that if I was being picky and choosy of as to what I was gonna, like, you know, like allow to lean into, and that could potentially help me. And not everything helped, but I did learn a lot along the way. I took value from everything that I explored, even though some things I didn't connect with, some things weren't like for me. You know, at least I knew I tried, I learned something, or I met some amazing people along the way. And that's, that began my journey. You know, so we'll go into in a little bit, we'll go into like how I, you know, started publicly speaking and all of that kind of stuff, because that's like a whole other layer and chapter.
What an incredible journey. And I mean, sometimes, I'm just speaking from my personal experience, sometimes, you know, those small signs from the universe that you need to get your shit together, we don't see them, we don't hear them. So sometimes what happens is that we experience something really frightening that shakens us, so we are forced to face our shit. You know,
absolutely.
And that, and whatever that horrific experience is, so for you it was a DUI, I'm assuming. Did you, was that what you got charged for? For me, it was a life-threatening experience. And once you are propelled on that path, it's like the universe is right behind you. Like, you know what I mean, right?
Yes, yes.
You, there's
absolutely.
No point of return. You can't, and I don't want to, you know, not that it's like super easy doing this healing work. It's bloody hard. But it's like, I can't go back. I don't even know who I was before that incident. So, you know, so I think it's beautiful. Your journey.
Thank you. I like to and liken it to, and like I always talk about, you know, that second DUI being like my final rock bottom, right? Because I truly believe that we don't have just one rock bottom. You know, for me, I had many, multiple rock bottoms in my journey, but this was the final one where I finally took the shovel. And I threw it away. And I was like, I'm no longer digging myself further down into this hole. Throwing it away. And now begins the climb back to the surface, right? Because I was in this deep, dark hole that I had dug myself into. And then it was like clawing my way out. And along the way, there were slips where I like slipped and fell back down, you know, but I just kept climbing, climbing, climbing to the point where I finally came above surface. And that's where I have been ever since, right? And so I absolutely, that hole, when I look back, it's still very much there. You know, it hasn't, I haven't buried it. It's still very much open. And I know that at any given moment, I can go right back in there. And I do not want to, because I have, like I said, I've clawed my way out of it, you know, and it hasn't been easy. You know, but I know that it's still an option, right? Like for many of us, it's still very much an option to go back to where we came from. You know, and pretty much lose all the progress that we've made, right? Because for me, it's addiction, right? Like I know that I cannot safely ever take another drink of alcohol again. I had relapse early on into my recovery journey, and that proved to me that I just could not safely take alcohol anymore. And so I know that if I were to drink, you know, a glass of wine or something like that, I would be right back in that hole at like in an instant, right? And all that work that I've done up until this point would, you know, would be lost, right? Like I have to like reset and redo it again and all that kind of stuff, right? And I'm just like, no, that's not even an option for me, right? And so, so coming out of that place was really hard. And in the beginning, it was incredibly lonely because there was so much shame. There was so much shame in admitting that I had a problem. Seeking help, all of that kind of stuff, right? These were things that nobody had ever taught me. I hadn't really seen any role models around me. I didn't really relate to anyone. Like there wasn't anyone that I was really looking at for guidance. I was just following whatever the universe was nudging me towards. I was like, okay, this might help. Okay, you know, but it was very, very lonely. And in the beginning, my family, they were very supportive. You know, when I came to them, they were the first people that I kind of told. Obviously, my husband from day one was absolutely it just my and continues to be my number one supporter. He also didn't know how he was going to support me, but he just knew that he was going to be with me. He's like, whatever it is that you need, if you need rides to the meetings, if you need whatever it is, I'm there for you, right? And I always knew that he was unwavering in his love towards me, which is a whole other story for a whole other podcast. Like him and I, our relationship of 15 years, we've been together for 15 years, and the life that we've built up until this point, you know, it has been it's very unique because not everyone sticks around with someone who's like, you know, in that like who I was back then, right? And the essence of who I really was, he always saw that. And he saw it before anyone else, right? And so now he gets, you know, the opportunity to like, that's who I am. I've truly embodied that those glimmers that I had back then. Into who I am now, and you know, as a wife, as a mother, as a partner, all of that kind of stuff, right? So it's been really beautiful, and I thank him every single day. He's just he's my person. He's my person for sure.
I
And
mean, it's
so,
incredible. He stood by her side through, you know, all of it, through all the
exactly.
drinking, partying, all the wild animal behavior. He was just there. And that's beautiful that you had your person by your side.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you know, I told my family, like, you know, just very mildly. I was like, I quit drinking alcohol, and everyone was like, you know, very stunned and surprised, but at the same time relieved because they knew it was a problem. You know, my closest people, like my family, you know, they saw how I got, right? Like they knew that if there was going to be alcohol at a family function, they knew I was always going to take it, like, you know, go overboard with it and all that kind of stuff, right? It was kind of like a family, not even a secret. It was just like normal. It was like, oh, okay, Abby's gonna be here. She likes to party. She likes to drink really heavy and all that kind of stuff. And so we know she's gonna black out and all that kind of stuff. It was very accepted, if you will. And so when I told them that I was quitting drinking, you know, they were surprised, but they were happy for me. They were very, you know, for the most part, they were pretty accepting and happy and supportive. And so a year went by and I had my 1 year alcohol-free anniversary. I had a meeting, like a birthday meeting, and my entire family came. So my entire family, like my sisters, my brother-in-laws, my mom. The only one that was missing was my dad, so he was not present. And so and he knew that I was, like, you know, kind of in recovery. He never really talked to me about it, never really, like, it was just kind of like don't ask, don't tell type of thing, right, with him. And so they were very supportive. And then shortly after that, I started to little by little in drip fashion started to talk about my journey publicly, so like on social media. And I will note that for the first 4 years of my recovery journey, I actually got off of all social media. So I deleted my Instagram, I deleted my Facebook for 4 years because I was pretty much committed to this deep inner work. And I just didn't want the noise of, like, you know, social media around me. And it was the best thing I could have done at that time. It's what I needed. And without it, I felt like I made so much progress. And so I was kind of in hermit mode for those first 4 years, really diving deep into just like full on recovery mode, right? Like it was a full-time job. It was actually very exhausting. Like I'd be at work as a nurse during the day for 8 hours, and then as soon as I'd be off, I'd come home and I'd go straight to, like, you know, therapy sessions, meetings, support groups, whatever it was that was on my agenda. It was almost every single day like that, right? And then I'd come home, I'd do journaling, and then sometimes I'd cry myself to sleep. Sometimes, like, you know, just like letting all the emotions come out, right? I was in a very raw place for those first 4 years. And then we decided to have a baby. So I was 4 years into recovery, and the time finally came where I felt, and I say we're never truly ready to become parents, but there comes a time when you feel, okay, you know, like I'm open to it. And so there was this time where I was open to it. And so we started trying, and then I got pregnant. And then for whatever reason, shortly after I got pregnant with my daughter, I decided to open up my social medias again. I just felt, ready at that time. I was like, oh, okay, this would be a good time to kind of open them up again. And so I opened up all my socials again, and just started posting about life, as like expecting my baby and all that kind of stuff, and then sprinkling tiny little nuggets of like, this is the journey I've been on, and then it was like my like sober anniversary, and I did a post, and some people started commenting like, oh, I didn't know that, like, oh my goodness, congratulations, and like, just things like that. Slowly. And once again, I was very terrified. I was very scared at this time of judgment. I was very scared to admit that, like, everything that had happened to me, all of that kind of stuff, right? I was not talking about my trauma at all. No one had any sort of clue that, this was part of my story, my journey. So I just started kind of sprinkling little bits here and there. And then I had really severe social anxiety because, like, obviously, when you take away the alcohol, you're no longer having the liquid courage. And so when I would go to events and things like that, I just would have like panic attacks and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't like it. I didn't like feeling like that and having that anxiety. So I just kept going and all that kind of stuff. So long story short, somebody told me after I shared with them just a snippet of my journey, they looked me in the eyes and they said, you have a powerful story to tell and you need to tell it because there's other people like you that are out there that are looking for examples and role models of women who have experienced what you've experienced, as a second generation immigrant, as a survivor of trauma, all of that kind of stuff, right? And so I believed her, I was like, oh, like at first I was like, what, me? Like, and so but there was some truth in it, right? So I was like, okay. So she actually gave me an opportunity to speak at a summit, and that pretty much is where my whole speaking in public journey started. So I started to speak in summits. Other people started hearing me speak, and they started inviting me on their podcasts and their summits and stages and all of that kind of stuff. And one thing led to another. And each time I would come up and I would share, I'd be more braver than the last. And each time I would disclose more things than I did the last time, right? And again, this was like in the background, I was doing intensive inner work, right? And so I was becoming a lot more I was finding myself. I was recognizing who I was beneath all of that stuff and all of that kind of stuff. And so and then the support from family started to kind of fade away a little bit, like they were still happy for me that, there was years go were going by, I hadn't taken a drink, all of that kind of stuff. But then when they started hearing the topics that I was speaking about publicly, the support started to lessen in the sense that like they were no longer coming to my talks, they were no longer, all of that kind of stuff. And at first I was really, really hurt. I was like, what is going on here? Like, why are like my sisters not coming to my talk? I would invite them and all that kind of stuff, right? And then I started to realize that, by me doing this work and by me like starting to like speak out about these things, it was making them very uncomfortable because they were not on that journey, right? Like they had experienced a lot of the things that I had experienced, and they just did not want to face it. They didn't want to deal with it. They wanted to continue with what we had been taught all our lives, which is to like forget about it, leave it in the past. All of that kind of stuff. And here I was boldly starting to talk about it more and more, right? And as we know, when we get triggered, it's usually because there's an unhealed part of us that we're witnessing in somebody else, right? And so I was just this one big trigger, to like into my family. And then it just started to become very lonely in that sense, right? Where I started to have a lot more support from other people who were not my blood family, right? I had like my own like community that started to grow and develop, and I was really leaning heavily on them and all of that kind of stuff, right? And then now fast forward 10 years into my journey, sadly, sad to say, but some of the strongest support people that I have are people that I haven't even met, people who are online, who are like my online besties, and they get it and all of that kind of stuff, right? And so they celebrate, with me when I have these milestones and, when I write an article, when I'm on a pod, whatever it is, right? And so I've recognized now that there's a price that is to be paid when we as survivors come out and we start to share the dirty laundry, the dirty family secrets, right?
Yeah.
The things that kept us sick, the things that kept us in shame and secrecy and all of that kind of stuff. There's
yeah.
there's quite a big, big price that we pay. And the price that we pay usually is being the scapegoat of the family, right?
Yeah.
Being the one that's ruffling feathers, the shit disturber,
yeah.
you know, all of that kind of stuff, right? And it's not for the faint of heart. You know, that's something that I really want to make it clear to people, that when you're stepping into this journey and into this identity of being the cycle breaker, that these are the things that could happen that come along with it, that not everybody that you love and that you thought would be supportive of your journey is going to be, right? And then we have to learn to be okay with that, because what's the alternate? The alternate is, you know, go back into shame and secrecy, go back into hiding, go back into not talking about these things. Like, this is how I heal. I heal by speaking about these things. Every time that I give voice to like these parts that had so much shame around them, I shed a layer of that shame, right? And instead replace it with courage and with strength, right? And so that will dive into, you know, a little bit of what you know, our topic that we wanted to talk about today, which is, you know, being the cycle breaker in the family.
Yeah, beautiful. And I completely agree with you, everything that you said about, you know, you experienced this shift in your family once you decided to, okay, I'm going to heal myself and I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about what I lived through, how my dark periods were, and, you know, the point of no return, and why I'm on this stage speaking today. And I think something that happens in dysfunctional family dynamics is everyone has a certain role. So when the scapegoat, the black sheep of the family, starts speaking up and starts healing, they no longer fit into that role they used to. So that I this is just me guessing. I think if everyone starts seeing behavioral changes in the black sheep, they get to question themselves too. So it's like that they're forced to question themselves, take a look at themselves, and not many people, they don't want to because they don't have the fucking courage. It takes a lot of courage, and a lot of willpower to do the work that we do.
Yeah,
you have to be
absolutely.
You have to be a very strong human being, and you have to be very honest and willing to take responsibility for the less beautiful sides of yourself.
Absolutely.
And not many
absolutely.
People could, they don't have the balls to do that. That's my experience.
Yeah. 100%. That is exactly, you hit the nail on the head, you know. And what I would add to what you shared is that for me personally, there is a deep seated rooted why and a strong intention as to why I speak about the things that I speak of, right? And for me, it really boils down to, there came a time in my journey where I recognized that what the work I was doing was bigger than me. It wasn't actually about me anymore. Right, that I was playing this role as a role model now, and really having the opportunity and the great honor to inspire other people and to help them, you know, others who don't have a voice, who don't see themselves in other people, to then see themselves in me and say, like I talked about when I was a young girl and I used to dream about thinking of somebody that looked like me, somebody that had a similar story as me, that I could turn to and say, you know, like, wow, that person's like me and all that kind of stuff. I've become that person now, right?
Yeah.
I've become the role model to my little me. And, you know, when I, one of the, this was like a pivot, and I've been talking a lot about this lately for whatever reason, it's just been coming a lot in my interviews. You know, there was a point when the first time I spoke publicly in a live open audience, I shared my story. I was trembling. I had, like, you know, a piece of paper. I had written it down. I read from the paper up on stage as I was shaking, you know, like, it was terrifying for me, right? Because this is like, these are the things that kept me sick, right? These are the things that I used to drink about, not to like talk about and stuff, right? And so I shared my story. And I remember coming out of that event when it finished, and there was a lineup of people that were waiting to speak to me. And when I went, person after person was telling me their story of, like, what, like tears in their eyes, you know, like I have a daughter who's currently in active addiction, and what you just shared really inspired me and gave me hope. Another person came and cried on my shoulder and was like, I'm also a daughter of an alcoholic, so I know what it was like to grow up in that kind of a home. Thank you for sharing my story. Another person was like, you know, so it was like, and then I was just taken aback. I was like, whoa, like this is powerful, you know, like this isn't about me anymore, right? Like if I can give the opportunity, and like I've had countless of these kind of experiences, you know, now even with social media, right, where I'll get a DM from somebody who I don't even know. And they will say, I just heard your story in such and such podcast, or I just read your story in this magazine, and you basically told my story. Thank you so much for your speaking to this and all that kind of stuff. It's given me things to think about, and it's given me the courage to start opening up about my own story, because I know that I'm not the only one, right? Those kind of things. And so that is my intention, right? Unlike most of the people that are the resistors to my story and all that kind of stuff, they think it's for like attention, right? Like you're just, oh, you're stuck in the past. Like these are the comments that I've heard from like loved ones, you know, like you're stuck in the past. We're about the future. You're always looking back to the past. You do this for likes. You do this for attention. And it's just like, you know, you can say all those things. I'm still rooted and grounded in my beliefs and who I am, and I know my intention behind what I'm doing, right? Like, you think this is easy for me to speak up on these things? It's not easy. It's hard, you know, but I'm doing it because I know that this is making a difference to not only myself, but, you know, those around me that can relate to even a snippet of what I have to share, right? And so that they don't have to be feeling so damn alone in their own journeys and start thinking that they're the only ones, right? And so I get pretty fired up about it.
No, I get that, and I completely agree with you. And the reason why I even started this podcast, it's because of my own journey, you know, of being so afraid of stepping into my light, stepping into my power, using my voice. Then when I started in my personal life sending shame back to sender, and discovered the power of speaking my truth and standing up for myself, I was like, wow. You know, and then I can't remember exactly how it was, and this is also not about me, but it was just to say that someone gave me some feedback about my story, and I was like, wow. Like, imagine if I could like create something and take this ripple effect on a global level. And then it came to me in 2021, I'm gonna make a podcast. And it took a while because I was terrified. You know, but the more I would share my story and I would read people's feedback, I was like, I'm gonna create a space for survivors where they aren't stigmatized, they aren't gaslit, they aren't, is it gaslit or gaslighted? It doesn't matter, you know what I mean. They aren't shamed, they aren't blamed. This is a podcast by a survivor for survivors. And together we are creating a ripple effect. So I'm on the same page as you. That is my why too. So I get it. I get it. And I see
I
you.
love that. And like you know, people like yourself, you know, other incredible humans that I have the opportunity to do this crazy life with, you know, all have those kind of same intentions, you know, those same drivers, right? That like, you know, this shit is not easy, you know. Like I would be it would be much easier for me to be hiding, you know, still, and you know, but at the same time I'd be killing myself softly, right? Like gently and slowly, because you know, with the secrecy and the shame, it just becomes so heavy. It becomes so heavy and so isolating and paralyzing. And you know, and it's just like I refuse. Once again, I look back and I see that hole that I dug myself out of, you know, or clawed my way out of, and I know that what's waiting for me there, right? And in that hole, I have left behind, you know, the shame, the secrecy, the hiding, you know, the all of that kind of stuff, the embarrassment, all of that kind of stuff. And I've replaced it with strength, you know, with courage, with, you know, that warrior attitude of like bringing honor and you know, truth and justice, you know, into the world. Because unfortunately there's others out there currently right now, who are going through the most horrific things that we don't even want to speak about because they're so horrific. and they truly feel they're the only ones,
Yeah.
right? And so if we can be a voice, you know, to even just that one person that is in
Yeah.
that current circumstance, you know, that's worth it to me. You know,
Yeah.
the backlash, the resistance, you know, the hate, all of that kind of
Yeah.
stuff, right? It's like, no, I'm willing to have that barrier in front of myself and take the bullets, you know, for that one person that hears my story and can say, wow, I really relate to that person. You know, I see
Yeah.
my story in her, right? So that makes
Yeah.
it all worth it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of stigma. I mean, oh my God, where do I start? There's so much stigma about disowning your family. Let's start with that. That's so I just recently wrote about this on Threads. There's just so much judgment towards why would you not have anything to do with your family? Can you not just stop playing the victim and forgive them? You know, there's that drill. Then there's a lot of stigma about having a mental illness. That's a whole nother topic itself. Then there's the whole, why are you talking about your sexual trauma? Are you just doing it to get attention? You attention-seeking little whore. You're just go to therapy saying, I am in therapy, so what are you talking about? I mean, no, I'm also mostly thinking about the Jeremy Indica post. We wrote about it on Instagram. And may I just say share
Absolutely,
what you wrote
absolutely.
to me. You were extremely triggered by it. You're very triggered by what people wrote to him because Jeremy bravely and beautifully made a reel where he had blurred the face of his of the perpetrator and him when he was a child, telling his story in a very creative and very powerful and beautiful way. And I thought it was brilliant. But there was so much backlash from these ignorance, I don't even know what to, just very ignorant and also very mean-spirited. And one of the comments was, you enjoyed it. And it had like 1300 likes. And I was like, I don't know what's more terrifying, the comments or the 1300 who think it's cool. And then there was someone else that wrote, you should have spoken up while it's happened. So, and because you didn't, you consented to it. There's so much stigma, there's so
So
much
much.
shame. So that people think that we are doing this to get attention and pity. No, there's so much backlash, just so much shit that comes with what we're doing. So no, we're not doing this to get attention. We're doing it because we know we are potentially saving someone's life. Someone actually told me what you are doing with this podcast is life saving. Life saving. So it's just complete
And
bullshit.
it's true. Yeah, and
We're
that's why
doing
I
this
say
to
it's
get
not for the
attention.
it's 100%. That's why I say it's not for the faint of heart, right? This journey. You know, you have to really and again, could I be standing here today with the strength that I have, you know, 5 years ago even? Probably not, right? Like this is built, right? This is built in layers, just like, you know, the healing, just like healing is in layers. And another thing that I definitely want to bring up is that 3 years into my journey, like I talked about, it was like a full-time job, right? Where I'd come home and I was doing all this like intense inner work. You know, there came a time when I started to become resentful towards the work because it was so exhausting and it felt never ending, right? And so I was around 3 years into my journey, and I remember talking to one of my recovery mentors, and I was like, "Hey, when is this going to end? Like, when am I going to be able to just kind of sit back and coast? Like, when am I not going to have to like show up for these sessions? Like, when am I just going to be over this?" Right? And I laugh now because I just like I just, you know, love on with so much tender compassion with that version of me, you know, who was like felt like I was just in a race, but really what I didn't recognize was that I was in a marathon, right? And in this marathon, there is no end date, there is no graduation date, there is no day when I can just sit back and say, "I'm healed. I am healed." You know, like it comes in layers, and each layer is deeper and deeper and deeper. And the beautiful thing is that with each layer that it gets uncovered, and when you do the work and you heal through it, you do become stronger. You do become, you know, that layer of shame starts to dwindle and release, and you leave it behind. you know, and that's why I can actually start talking about the things that for me, my sexual trauma was the very last thing that I wanted to open. I would do anything. I would look at all the other areas of and forms of abuse that I endured easily. But when it came to the sexual part of my journey, holy smokes, that took me years into my recovery journey. And I had to face it because it started to become a huge problem in my marriage. It started to affect my relationship with my partner. You know, we're to the point where it was getting very dangerous, right? Because of all my triggers and all of that kind of stuff that were starting to surface. And I couldn't understand. I couldn't explain. I'm like, why am I like this? Like, it has nothing to do with you. It's all about me. And I just can't explain it. But to him, it was straight rejection, right? I was straight like rejecting him and pushing him away and things like that, right? So it really led me to start become curious about this part of my life. And it was the most important box that I could open out of all the traumas that I really went through, because that was the one that my little me was very much frozen and paralyzed in so much fear, shame, secrecy, pain, you know. And it's one of the things that now I speak very boldly about, right? Because both you and I are survivors of childhood sexual abuse. It is one of the most horrific things that a child could go through, right? And unfortunately, there are so many of us out there that are carrying the weight of that secret, you know, to this day, right? And and if I could, you know, be brave enough and have done the work enough up until this point to be able to share openly about it, and it helps somebody else open up about them, their own journeys, and start to heal that part of their life, then I've done my work. You know, I've done my work, and it's well worth it, right? Irregardless of the others that are out there thinking that we have ill intentions and all that stuff. And again, going back, the reason why they feel that way, those people, is because they are triggered by the work we're doing, because there's obviously an unhealed part in them, right? That ignites the shame for them, ignites, you know, the hatred, all of that kind of stuff, right? And so I just, you know, yes, it was very triggering for me to see that, because I felt so angry. I was angry at how dare people, you know, turn something so powerful, so courageous into something disgusting, you know, and start like spewing out these like horrible things to him and stuff like that, right? Clearly you're either a perpetrator and you've done this yourself, or you are also a survivor and you're still very much stuck in the shame and the secrecy part of it, right? And you don't like for the mirror to be you know, put in your face, basically, right? And so it's it's like, once again, it's not for the faint of heart.
It isn't. And I also think a third thing, I mean, it's not just three things, it's complex, but I think one of the other things is also ignorance. And I feel like what people, they do not understand, and what our culture has conditioned us to believe. So if a survivor steps forward and says, I've been sexually abused, I feel like our culture has conditioned us to be like, that's just something you do not speak up about. You keep that to yourself, go to therapy and deal with it. We don't want to know about it. And so when you are courageous and you speak on it, I think it's the programming that takes over. Now we're going to shame it because you are doing something and speaking on something we're not supposed to speak on. This is supposed to be something you keep to yourself. And because people cannot comprehend that level of trauma, it's okay. So I feel like I want to say I'm not negating any other trauma.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been through a lot of different trauma as you have. And I will say, I mean, I'm a torture survivor, for fuck's sakes. That was, that's insane. But I will say nothing comes close to the child sexual abuse. The child sexual abuse, the impacts of that is on another level that I can't even put to words how damaging it has been and how heartbreaking. And I'm working through it right now. I am in it right now, and it's not easy, you know. And even my trauma psychologist, he said child sexual abuse is the absolute worst violation, a boundary violation a human can be exposed to, because it messes with you on such a deep level, on such a profound level. It impacts every area of your life, and you don't know it until you unpack it. And that's Exactly. also my experience. So I feel like what we have survived, there is so much. Oh no, what is the English word? In Danish, it's called taboo. Taboo.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't. You just don't speak on especially child sexual abuse. So how dare you stand on that stage and tell us about how you, or go on Instagram and tell us about how you were sexually abused? There must be something wrong with you.
Yeah.
So it's like this. I don't know if you can call it a projection, but I just feel like we get on the receiving. Oh, there's a tiny little human. There's two tiny.
Yeah.
So cute. There's a third tiny little human.
They're all coming in, yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like it's something social condition. It's with social conditioning. I think also that's why people react the way they do. And it's heartbreaking because we don't deserve all that stigma that's put on us, all that hate. I'm a firm believer that you should actually support everyone who is brave enough to speak up and create a difference in the world, because that's what I think we do. I honestly can't concentrate. There's bouncing children in the background.
I know, and I'm sorry.
And Abby has switched off
the volume.
The volume, so you don't pick up on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's no, okay by me.
To your point, I have an earpiece, so they can't hear anything.
Oh,
so,
okay.
you know, like to your point also is that, you know, there is a little bit of not only the taboo and stigma, but people don't want to, unfortunately, acknowledge that this is a very real thing that is not only happening still, but has happened. Right. And there's still a lot of denial around the prevalence of how prevalent this really is. Right. And so when they're hearing all these stories, when they're hearing all these, you know, like people just don't want to go there because it's so uncomfortable. It's such a deeply uncomfortable truth, right, to really face.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately, you know, it is a very real thing.
It
and
is.
So, you know, and we have, for whatever reason, been guided to do this work. And, you know, we have taken up the responsibility of it, right? And so with that comes a lot of really hard things. Come a lot of really hard hurdles, you know, to overcome, to work through. But we are living proof that we can, you know, successfully overcome, you know, these hurdles. It's not easy, but if we lean into community, we lean into each other, and we keep that greater vision, mission, and purpose at the forefront as to why we're doing what we're doing, you know, we can make a difference, right? Even if it's just one person at a time, one inner child at a time, you know, one person, one survivor at a time, right? And so, you know, we'll keep doing the good work.
we absolutely will. And I read your post some weeks ago where you wrote, "I have accepted divine responsibility," and I was like, oh my goodness, it resonated with me on such a deep level. Cause I was like, yes, so have I. And I just knew what you meant. And then I read the caption and I was like, yeah, this is a sister. This is a sister on a mission. And I'm right there with you. I'm supporting you. I see you. I get it. So it's absolutely beautiful. I'm curious to know regarding the stigma. So we've spoken about like the societal stigma, but we also experience it in, I mean, I don't experience it anymore because I've like kicked everyone out of my life that didn't accept me as I am. I was like, fuck you. Yeah. Then I'd rather be alone. And now I have amazing people in my life that love me and accept me exactly who I am. They don't give a shit about my diagnosis. They don't care about my past. I mean, they think it's heartbreaking, but they don't judge me for it. I'm curious to know, how do you deal with stigma and judgment and shame in your like more inner circles? If you experience
it. To be honest.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. So, like I said, I heavily rely on the support systems that I have created around me. And a lot of them are people that I've never met, you know, like my online community, of other fellow survivors who get it, who are on, you know, who have overcome or who are working through similar things that I have. Those are the people that I turn to. So one big piece of advice that I always give to everyone is please, please, please don't isolate. Please reach out, even if it's one person that you know that can relate to what you're going and experiencing through, reach out to them, right? Because when isolation as survivors is very dangerous, right? Because when we isolate and we start to, we go down this very deep, dark spiral of I'm the only one, no one understands me, no one gets what I'm going through, I should be ashamed, all of those kind of things, right? But the instant, the minute that I lean into somebody who I know gets it, you know, which is, you know, a handful of people that I have in my life, like it is just, it is like medicine to the soul, you know, where I'm like, I'll tell them, you know, like I'm going through this, this is what happened, this is the backlash I received. And then we just, like, they always have the most encouraging things to say, and vice versa. You know, I have other friends that reach out to me, and they're like, you know, this is what happened to me, and all that kind of stuff. And we heal through community, right? We heal through that connection that we each, that we have as individuals, but to this, like the similar stigma that we're fighting against, right? And so that is my biggest piece of advice is do not isolate, you know, reach out, even if it's one person, you know, surround yourself with people who you know value the work that you're doing and who are also doing the work. Right. Because then it normalizes it to you. You know, that's how I fight against it. Because if I didn't have those key people in my life, those key support groups, and I have other women's group that I belong to, I have other groups that I belong to in general, that I'm just so grateful and blessed that when something comes up, I can lean on them. Right. And then we heal together. And then it makes it that much more overcomeable, right? Because there's other people in my life who are not that to me, and so I know not to talk to them about those things, right? And I'm also, you have to also be okay with being misunderstood, you know, you will be misunderstood, you know, and sometimes from the people that you care about, right? They will misunderstand why you're doing what you're doing, but once again, when you're rooted in that mission, vision, and purpose, and in that why, and you have that community support around you, you can do it, you know, like it doesn't make it easy, but it makes it doable. Right. And it's just the road is a lot more, peaceful, if you will. Right. And less lonely. Right. And so that's, those are like my biggest pieces of advice of when we're, you know, kind of healing through these things, not to isolate and just to lean into the support that we do have. Right. Cause there's lots, and then we have an incredible online communities on Instagram that I love, you know, that I'm a part of, you know, that I, that I'm so grateful for, you know, those others that are people like I've never met, like yourself, right?
Likewise. Likewise. Community is the way. That's really all I can say. I completely agree with you. And I'm so grateful that we got to connect. I think it was through healing and CPTSD. I mean, I think Dani, she's created such an amazing community, and so many of us have connected through her community. And that is the beauty of a survivor, you know, stepping into their why, their truth. And this is the effect of it. This is why we are having this conversation, because another survivor made a choice, you know. So yeah, I'm just so grateful. The ripple
effects are extensive.
Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. I'm so incredibly grateful, and I'm so excited to see what's next for you. Do you have anything you want to share with us? Is there anything coming up that you want people to know of, or?
Yeah, a couple of things. So I'm currently working on, so I'm a transformational life coach, and I, my specialty is in reparenting and inner child healing. And I have been working tirelessly to create a signature program that I'm going to be launching here in the fall. And it is for cycle breakers. So it is for people who identify as the cycle breaker. And it's just going to be an incredible transformative journey that I'm going to help guide them along to how to, number one, recognize triggers, right? Because we have lots of triggers, all of us, right? How to recognize the triggers, the root of them, you know, to be able to break free from some of these limiting beliefs and subconscious patterns that have been carried and passed down to us from generations. And then to be able to then learn how to parent our little selves, our inner children, to then parent our own children, you know, in a healthier, safer, nurturing way, because I truly believe that every child matters and every child deserves to live in a safe, healthy, nurturing home with a healed mom, with a healed dad, you know, so that we can break those generational chains. And so I'm very excited about that. I'm going to be doing a workshop in August. Follow me on Instagram at avuh.vee. That's where I will announce all of my upcoming projects and all of that fun stuff. But I love to connect with new people. So please follow along, send me a DM. I'd love to get an introduction, all of that kind of stuff, and to be able to continue to build the community around ourselves. And so, yeah. And then other than that, lots of podcasts coming up, summits, all of that fun stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I can't wait. And I'm so excited to see that that program launch in fall. Yeah. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Jaslyn. Thank you so much for being an incredible host, for allowing me to be on your platform, and for this beautiful conversation that we had.
Oh, you're so, so, so welcome. I'm so grateful that you're here. And yeah, let's stay connected. And who knows? Maybe you'll be back for another episode about another topic. There is so much to talk about. You know,
there is so much to talk about.
So
absolutely.
That was it for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate Alchemical Voices and follow the community on Instagram. Until next time.